My Mac Podcast number 152. We've got a boatload of people and a boatload of topics to go through, so let's jump right into the show.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And welcome to another edition of the MyMac podcast. I am Tim Robertson, and I've got a whole bunch of people with me this week. Let's start at the top of my Skype list, and that would be Donnie. Hi, Donnie.
Hey, Tim.
So you're back with us after missing only a half of a show, and hopefully this week I won't be no sneak attacks from your books attacking me from the top shelf, because that
I'll see what I can arrange.
That kind of freaked me out last week. Next up is Guy Searle. Hi, Guy.
Hello, Tim. How are you today?
Are you talking with your leopard voice?
Yes, I am.
You're kind of impressed with leopard's new speech capabilities, correct?
Yeah, I am. It's much better than Victoria, which, you know, the pitch and the tone of the voice would go up and down depending on when you were speaking.
So,
and
which voice are you listening to mostly?
Actually, the only one that they have that is native or actually new to Leopard is, what's that guy's name? Let's see. Go to speech. Hello, speech. It's Alex. Hello, Alex.
So you like Alex over Veronica?
Well, yes, I do, Tim.
Next up, he hasn't been on the show in quite a while, Owen Rubin. Hi, Owen.
Hi there.
Owen's the only person that's speaking to us via Skype on a PC. What the heck? Why? A PC?
I take it he's not running Leopard.
Yeah, are you running Leopard on that PC, Owen?
Or are you on the PC because you are running Leopard?
No, I'm on the PC because it's the only one the headset plugs into. And it does run OS 10, by the way.
It does run well. What the heck? Absolutely. Next up is Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Tim.
And Rich was on the last show with Donnie, so those two are recording. And all the way from sunny England.
Not right now.
Leonard Cohen.
You're not very sunny here at the moment.
Nor here, actually. So no fenestration this week, I take it, right? You're going to do it live.
I figured it was easier to do it this way and sit down and record and do all that editing.
Yeah, it probably is, actually. A little bit more free flow this way. We do have a ton of topics, and I'm actually going to start kind of at the bottom because I think this is the big news of the week. And let's see how much play it gets in the Mac media. But there's a Trojan horse affecting the Macintosh now. Has everyone read up on this new devious ploy by these hackers out there?
But this is one of those ones where people aren't going to admit to getting it, are they?
Oh, well, absolutely not. It took me a long time to get it off my system.
Kind of like VD.
What do you find?
I'm just going to... it's called the osx.rsplug.a Trojan horse because no one can give it a scary name like, I don't know.
Killer.
Mac OS killer virus number one, you know. That might get some attention. Why do they have to put the dots in there all over the place? It's kind of stupid.
Well, didn't this come out from like Semantic or one of those guys?
Let's go through this real quick. And I believe I have the name of the company who reported it. It's a malware software attacking the Mac OS and it has been discovered. It's a malware. It's not a virus. It doesn't send itself anywhere. It is downloaded mostly from adult sites that fool users into downloading a needed video codec to view the adult film. For instance, if you click a video and it says QuickTime is unable to play this movie file, please click here to download a new version of the codec, which is quite common on the PC side, but you don't see that very often on the Mac side. So anybody listening to this that likes to frequent adult sites, don't download any video.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
Thank God none of us ever go to adult sites.
No, never. Let's see. Virus Barrier from Intego Software, which is $80, is probably the best protection out there right now from what I'm reading online. The current version will protect you, will get rid of the virus or the malware if it gets on your hard drive. So you're somewhat protected if you spend $80. How long do you think it is before Apple patches the macOS in QuickTime and eliminates this problem.
Can they?
I'm not sure they can. Yeah.
Wow, that was cool. Can you guys, like, do dance numbers too, or just... Let's go with David Cohen.
I'm not sure that they can, because there isn't really a vulnerability except for the person sat at the computer trying to download the codec. The key thing to note with this is that ordinarily, if QuickTime wants a codec, it will take you to an Apple QuickTime site where it will offer you a list of codecs and you choose the one you need. Whereas this isn't doing that. It's saying, oh, we can provide that codec for you. So that's behavior you wouldn't normally expect to see. So that's like a giveaway that this is going on. But obviously, if you're not used to seeing that, you might be fooled. Then you might think, okay, I need to download it. And obviously, once you've downloaded it, you then say, well, I'm installing something. So you type in your password, and then the thing's on your system. I think the key thing to note about this is that if you're running Tiger rather than Leopard, it makes some changes to your DNS settings so that it routes you through the malware sites in order to do its thing. And under Tiger, if you go into your network settings, you can't see the changes it's made, so you've got no idea that it's there.
So again, $80 for the virus protection, and you will be covered. Rich,
so it doesn't. What does it drop itself in the codec folder in the QuickTime? Is that where it hides itself?
No, it's actually not a codec at all. Basically, if you go through the entire process, which is it downloads it, you get a DMG, you double click it, you have to type in your administrative password. You know,
sounds like you've done this, guy.
No. But I mean, these should all be
experience.
Well, no, I've read up on it. I've never ever go to those kinds of sites. Yeah, but if you have to type in your administrative password, I mean, that should be a red flag automatically that, you know, something's going on that shouldn't really be happening. You shouldn't really see that unless you're, you know, installing some kind of software that, whoa, what did I just hear?
You clicked on some permission thing. Sorry. I just sent you a virus. Don't worry.
Oh, great. Thanks. Yeah,
just double click it and keep quiet. It's a video. It's Britney Spears, we swear.
Take it.
Heist Security is the one that reported it. They're also reporting that there are some major flaws and security problems with Leopard. In fact, if you install Leopard and you had the firewall turned on in Tiger and you're doing an upgrade, the installed firewall is turned off by default, and it's still off even if you had the firewall on in Tiger. That's kind of a problem. But beyond that...
Is it?
They're even saying that it does not behave as expected. Network connections to non-authorized services can still be established, even under the most restrictive settings, block all incoming connections. And it does allow access to the system services from the internet.
I want to find a bit more out about this before I condemn what Apple have done in Leopard. For a start, most people I would have thought would be behind a router, and you know that gives you more protection than anything you run on the local machine.
Right.
But, you know, this kind of read to me when I first read about it as, you know, one of those, you know, let's blow this problem out of all proportion. There was not a lot of detail about what exactly was going on underneath, so I'm going to sort of reserve judgment on this so I know a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I could.
What were you saying, Owen?
I forgot. So, but I was thinking about this. Isn't this the same as the last so-called virus that hit the Mac that you actually had to give it permission to install? I don't really call that a virus.
Yep. No, and they're not calling this a virus. They're calling it malware, which is different. Malware tricks you into installing it.
And to be fair, most of the problems that people have on Windows machines are along the same lines. You know, we're not... Back in the days of, you know, prior to XP, SP2, where you could automatically, you know, have something upload to your machine without your knowledge.
A lot of the adware still does on the Windows side. I run four different ad blockers on this one PC, and you'd be surprised how many things try to automatically install on the Windows side. All these adware.
Now, Donnie, you're in the education. A teacher, do you see a lot of virus attacks on any PCs at the school?
At my current school that I just started at this year, I haven't heard of anything, but I'm guessing the server side is protected.
Whoever's typing, stop.
Protected really well. I mean, if their sites are blocked left and right, I mean, if I go to mymac.com, some of the ads are even blocked for some reason, or I can't blog at certain sites, or there's the, I can't think of the word, but the site protector, you know, the, that blocks things that shouldn't get through is very strong at that school. So I'm assuming the virus protection is just as strong.
Well, let's be honest, probably the best virus, at least on the Macintosh side, and even Windows, the best virus and malware protection you can have is just to buy a router that goes between your cable modem or your DSL and your computer.
Many of the cable modem, right? DSL modems have them built in now.
Yeah.
All of them do. I don't know any router that doesn't have a built-in.
No, I mean, I said the cable modems and the DSL modems have some of that built in now. Yeah.
A lot of them, yeah.
But the problem is... The best virus protection is just don't open something if you don't know what it is.
Yeah, that unfortunately.
Yeah, but this is kind of a tricky thing that if you're trying to watch a video, and let's be honest, a lot of people do visit adult sites. And right now we just know for a fact that this is on adult sites. But you get one viral video that goes around of some kid playing the clarinet that's really hilarious. And one malware guy... also attaches this malware to that video. I mean, let's not just assume that you're going to get this.
That's what I'm thinking.
Part of the difference also that this isn't really a video codec. If you download it and open it and supposedly install it, if you go to play the video, this is what I was reading today, if you go to play it, it takes you right back to the site where it tells you you have to download this codec. So
it's too late by then, right?
Oh yeah, certainly, but it's not actually a video codec. It's a Trojan horse that's to be installed to do some damage, and that's the only thing that it does.
Well, so do you think people are smart enough to know that if it asks them to install it a second time, that they probably got stung, or do you think most people wouldn't know that?
If they're foolish enough to download something that requests their administrative password from a porno site. I'm sorry, you know,
yeah.
I'm not going to have a whole lot of sympathy for them.
I'm in your court. All right.
Let's face it, though, most people aren't going to know about this anyway. I mean,
well, they will if they listen to the MyMac.com podcast.
Okay, so half, to a lot of people.
Self-promotion.
So like all six people know about this now. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Seven, sorry. Absolute,
well, seven, because I listen to it myself.
I think two of us actually have it.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant only two.
Just one more thing. One more thing on this, though, is that I think we need to bear in mind that, bearing in mind it isn't a codec, it is just a DMG file that installs something, it's only going to be a very short period of time before it starts appearing as spam, or it's loaded up on BitTorrent, and it's being hosted up and being presented as a whole load of different other things that in fact it's not, just as an excuse to try and get it on your machine. So I think people do need to be very, very cautious over the next week or two about downloading stuff from, you know, not from non-reputable sites and installing it, because it may not be what you think it is. And, you know, hopefully, often when these things go really nuclear and appear everywhere, some of the virus companies will release something that's kind of free that you can run, will actually find this thing and clean it off your system rather than requiring you buy the whole package.
How many of you remember a free program called Disinfectant? I bet Owen does.
I sure do.
Wasn't that just the greatest? Rich does too. That was just the greatest free program, and it was updated quite often.
Updated regularly, and it was all. It seemed to beat a lot of the papers.
That's all I ran for a long time, and I ran.
And it worked every time.
I ran.
Do you remember who did it?
Classic OX. Classic OS.
Yes, it was a Classic OS. Yeah. It started on System 7, and it went all the way up. It worked all the way up through 9.2. And
we tried to get it installed. You know, as part of the system, but there was a whole bunch of problems over that.
So you know more about this program, Owen? Tell us a little bit about it.
No, just that I ran it. I was just trying to look up if I can remember who made it.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember that.
Can't remember either.
It had a very distinctive icon, and
hypodermic.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the most original icons that I had ever seen at the time. And I ran a local bulletin board system. I didn't run the whole system, just the Mac software side of it. And that was always the most downloaded program on the service. I mean, everybody had Disinfectant, and it just worked great. It took very little system resources.
I'm trying to think. The only thing I remember it actually removing for us was there was a Microsoft Word macro virus that was going around at that time, and it was sent out to remove that because Microsoft was very slow in actually getting a fix for that. In fact, they still don't have a fix for it. They just had a program that would pull it out of your files. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
That was the first real virus as far as I was concerned.
Then there was the auto-loading CD virus that was...
Didn't Mac Attic actually release a CD that had that on it?
Yes. I think it did.
I was trying to remember
if anybody ever got hit by that. I remember them talking about it, but did it ever do any damage to anybody?
Well, I do know I had a job interview with McGraw-Hill, at least a division of McGraw-Hill in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they were authoring CDs at the time. And I went up there, and they had this – it was a little overblown as far as I was concerned, but they had like these 10 Macs, and they were literally behind tape. They had taped all these 10 Macs off, and I went, why are those – it looked like a police – you know, the police had blocked it. I said, why is that like
police
that?
Line?
And they said, well, those are all infected with the virus. And I – the tape is going to somehow protect something? Don't get too close to these. I thought it was the strangest thing.
So when it's infected, weird. You put it behind a yellow police don't cross tape.
That's right, and then you're completely safe. Right. So let's get out the malware. Let's get into some Leopard talk, because obviously that is... Well, before we get into Leopard, because I think that's going to be pretty much the rest of the show once we get to it, Apple actually updated the MacBook and the MacBook Pro lines today.
Yes, they did.
Does anybody have the specs?
I believe what they did with the MacBook is they've now moved them on to the Santa Rosa chipset, which is the same as in the MacBook Pro. They bumped the processor speeds a couple of hundred megahertz on all of the models. Pricing remains the same. They're now 1 gigabyte of memory as standard right across the range, and the Vampire video that's in the MacBook has been upgraded from the GMNi 50 to something called the GMAX 1900, which is meant to be a fair bit better than the GMNi 50 in terms of video performance.
The old one, I think, used 64 megs of shared memory, and the new one will take up to 128. But the one of the other differences for the MacBook, at least, is that now you can bump it all the way up to 4 gigs of RAM.
That's right.
Yes, you can. OWC had a sale up right away for 4 gigabyte chips
for that. Computing... I tell you what, when a new Mac comes out, Otherworld Computing always seems to have a really good price for the maximum amount of memory that you can put into that machine the same day. It's amazing how fast that company moves. And kudos to them. I mean, although personally I think if anybody listening to this show needs memory, check out Trans International. They are a sponsor of ours. So if you need memory or hard drive, that's the one to go to. Just go up to mymac.com and click their banner. gotta give it up to our sponsors, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, hard drive. Let me go there right now.
But, you know, Otherworld Computing has been a past sponsor of both the website and the podcast, so I still give them proper respect. They're a good company to work with. So, yep, and then the MacBook Pro was booted up to, what, 2.6 gigahertz?
As an option. So I think it's a couple hundred dollars more, and you can have to do that as a build-to-order option when you buy your MacBook Pro if you so desire.
This is kind of strange to me. We talk about, and you're reading online, the speed bump for the MacBook, and they're like, oh, it's only a couple hundred megahertz, so it's not a major upgrade. Could you imagine 10 years ago someone saying, oh, it's only just a couple hundred megahertz faster?
Yeah, it'd be like going forward in time 5 years.
It's just a couple hundred megahertz, no biggie. You probably won't even see the difference. And that's the funny part. You probably won't see much of a difference on a 200 or 2 gigabyte machine compared to a 2.2 gigahertz machine. You're probably not going to see that big of a difference.
But it's nice that you can add for 4 gigabytes of memory instead of 2. That'll make a difference.
You can also get a larger amount of memory on the graphics card for the MacBook Pro. You can get a GeForce 8600 with 256 megs as opposed to the 128 that comes with the 15-inch.
Do you think we're at the point now where we really don't even need a desktop, that the higher-end laptops are more than enough power to do pretty much anything you need to do on the computer, including video editing, audio editing? You can do everything on a MacBook Pro.
Well, especially considering that Go ahead.
I was just saying, unless you need cards.
Yeah, but how many people are still using cards other than server side? Other than Owen.
I'm using them too.
I use them for high speed disk drives.
Yeah, I've got a FireWire card in my G5 tower, and I've got actually two of them with extra USB ports and extra FireWire ports. I like plugging stuff in there, guys. I like a lot of stuff.
Well, yeah, but you know, most of that can be taken care of by
externally.
Yeah, externally.
Yeah.
And when you consider the fact that they all also have monitor out, you can have your big 24-inch monitor powered by one of these, like the 15 or 17-inch MacBook Pro, even the 13-inch regular MacBook.
No, what I'm saying is I've got six external hard drives plugged into this thing. So,
sure, and there's no reason why you couldn't do the same thing with either the MacBook or the MacBook Pro.
Yeah,
but you have to have a hell of a lot of hubs.
If you get an iMac,
what were you going to say, David?
If you get an iMac versus a MacBook, and you want to hook a MacBook up to a monitor, it's still cheaper to get an iMac, and you get more power out of it.
And well, that's true.
Yeah, you'll get a better resolution. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd rather have an iMac as my full time computer.
Yeah, but
what were you going to say, David?
You're not going to take the iMac on a plane with you, though.
No. I've currently got my
one at a time. David Cohen.
I currently have a G5 tower, and I think probably January, February next year, I'm going to sell that up and take my current MacBook and retire that, and basically make that my desktop machine at home, and then I'll buy another machine for portable use. I don't have any concerns about doing that. I think the MacBook should be able to do everything that I want to do at home.
Yeah, I think probably, at least for me, I have a MacBook Pro and a G5, although the G5 is going to be replaced within a week. To me, the big difference is I don't carry anything on the MacBook Pro with me that I don't already have a copy of on the desktop machine, because I can't lose the desktop machine. I can lose the PowerBook or the MacBook Pro.
Yep.
I still think MacBook and MacBook Pro is just horrible names. Why couldn't they stuck with the PowerBook?
So, Tim, does this mean you don't back up your portable?
I don't keep... Well, I do as far as documents and stuff like that. I do over the network back to the G5, or more specifically, the FireWire hard drives that are slave to the G5. But I don't keep anything... For instance, we're recording this show right now in the G5. If I was recording it on the MacBook Pro, which could handle it easily, as soon as I was done, before I did anything else other than saving it, I would be backing it up over to the MacBook.
But you said you're running Leopard, right?
Yes, I'm running Leopard on the G5 as well as the MacBook Pro. Let's get into the Leopard talk, because there's just a lot of stuff.
For a cost of a hard drive, Time Machine will do it for you.
Yes, but let me give you a prime example. And I talked about this on the little mini podcast, that I had a lot of problems upgrading the MacBook Pro to Leopard. When I first did the upgrade, I just did a simple upgrade, and I got the blue screen of death. And I'm so happy that us Mac users can now experience the blue screen of death that, you know, Windows users have had for years. That's very nice of Apple to finally bring that feature to the Mac. Thank you, Apple.
It's a boot camp.
Was it really blue?
Yes, it is really blue, and it looks exactly like a PC that's just hung.
That's an industry standard, Evan.
I think it's actually in the bootloader, and that's where it's pulling the video signal from, and that's why it's blue. But it really sucks. You're like, oh, man, it's blue.
I'm so blue.
At least give me gray.
Is there any text? Is there any text?
No, all you see is a blue screen and your black cursor. And you can move the cursor around and click on anything you like, but there's just nothing there.
So you haven't, see, that's not quite as good as a Windows blue screen of death, because they give you so much crap you can't do anything with.
Yes.
It gives you 20 minutes of reading, then you go, I'm still screwed.
Yeah, I still can't start up. So on the MacBook Pro, I tried to do an update or an upgrade. Didn't work. I got to that blue screen. Okay, I'm going to do an archive and install. I did that, and it actually started booting at that point, but it was just acting really, really buggy, and I said, you know what, at this point, I'm just going to start from scratch. My only hesitation was that I have Boot Camp and Vista on that machine, and I didn't really want to have to go back and install Vista on the MacBook Pro, but I said, oh, screw it, I'm just going to erase the whole drive, start from scratch, reinstall Adobe CS3, Microsoft Office, FileMaker. Those are the big programs that I use on there, other than the iLife stuff. And it works great now. It flies. It seems a lot faster to me than it did under Tiger.
I just can't think of anything worse than having to drag out all those CDs and start reloading software.
But you know, from
to me, that's the worst thing.
The blue screen is much worse if you know.
If you experience it,
you can only pray to get to the point where you can start installing software again. Trust me, Rich. But once I got it going from start to finish, and I'm talking about completely installing the Leopard from scratch, Adobe CS3, blah, 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 everything, I was at the point where the computer was workable for me. I could go back on the road and I have all my applications. It took about 2.5 hours, which really isn't a lot of time.
So, Tim?
Yep.
According to a Microsoft website, Apple posted a support document over the weekend admitting problems with the blue screen problems on Mac upgrades.
Yep.
That's on a Microsoft site. That's very funny.
Well, when you look at you, in a way, I don't blame Microsoft for doing this, because if you look at the icons, for instance, under shared on a Mac for a PC, so you can connect to a PC, it shows the PC monitor as a blue screen. With little tiny white text on it. And you can't tell me that wasn't done on purpose on Apple's part. So
I can see Steve Ballmer must be sat there with veins popping out the top of his head right now at that.
Chairs flying across the room.
It's the easiest screen to get a screenshot of.
But, you know, and Mac users, we did it right here on this podcast for many years, is making fun of that blue screen of death. And I think that this is our comeuppance. It really is.
I think that's a very good point.
Go ahead, David Cohen.
I think that's a very good point, Tim. I think, you know, as Mac users, we've been a little bit smug of while.
A little bit?
And I think we're going to have to eat a little bit of crow with this one, because obviously some of the people's upgrade problems have been quite heavily reported, and I'm sure there's plenty of Windows users going, oh, I thought Macs didn't have this when they upgraded. I thought it was all easy and simple. And we're just going to have to take that.
As far as eating crow goes, at least Thanksgiving is around the corner.
There you go. Owen?
I just had CNET
news. I'm losing you, Owen.
You getting a blue screen there, Owen?
I got a blue. I installed the virus. I'm trying to see how it works.
Working great there.
It's working really well.
Sorry. I just said CNET news is having a field day comparing it to the Windows blue screen of death. So.
And honestly, I don't blame anybody for doing that. Why not? Because we absolutely had it coming. We need to be brought down to earth a little bit. We do have the best computing platform in the world, but it's not perfect, and so let's stop acting like it is what I say.
What platform is? Tim, didn't you say that during your upgrade you had problems with your printer drivers?
Yes. And what happened was I went back and I didn't install any print drivers. I accidentally unclicked install print drivers when I unclicked all the different languages.
That's a problem.
I installed the print drivers and everything's just working fine now.
It is, yeah.
There are a lot of programs, pretty popular programs, that are not Leopard compatible or are having a lot of problems. Some of the more popular ones right now is SuperDuper.
That's a problem for me.
What is SuperDuper? I don't use it.
It's a backup program.
Backup program, right.
Great. Now, Tim, have you heard anything about Carbon Copy Cloner?
Nope, I haven't read any problems with that yet, but...
Okay, so anybody who's used to using SuperDuper, unless you hear differently, Carbon Copy Cloner, they're both free, so that's probably a pretty good go-to.
Cocktail, it's a disk utility program. Not disk utility, it's a utility program. You can have it automatically empty your caches and just rebuild the desktop file. It does all kinds of stuff for you.
You know what I think?
That's not compatible.
I think it's pronounced Yasu, YASU. It does pretty much the same thing as Cocktail. I think it's a little cheaper, too, and I think they just upgraded that one for Leopard.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect really
everybody
many of the utilities to work with Leopard, because it is a different, somewhat a different architecture, and they need to be upgraded. I wouldn't personally want to run any of these programs until I knew for a fact that they were Leopard compatible. Right.
And of course, there's Onyx, which I'm sure there'll be an update for, which is totally free.
I wouldn't touch Onyx with a 10-foot pole right now.
Oh, no, I'm saying when they updated though.
Right.
Let's see.
Photoshop 7. Does anybody even care that Photoshop 7?
Strangely, which is like a I still use program Photoshop at this point. 7. But I'm not going to use it on that machine. So
not anymore.
Now, I have down here Alchemy TV, but I understand that that was actually upgraded today.
What is that?
So that is compatible. DVR software, watching television on your Mac.
Kind of like ITV.
Works in conjunction with the ITV. Well, that's the software for the ITV.
Oh, okay.
Or at least it was. My understanding is they don't work together anymore. It's two different companies.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Mac Fixit site, and it's reporting that Cocktail doesn't work, Sidetrack doesn't work, Onyx doesn't work, Palm Desktop is a little funky.
AOL doesn't work.
Now, that's a big one for a lot of people.
I had some problems with widgets as well. A bunch of my widgets didn't work.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but oddly enough, not on the same machine. I've got a screen capture widget called Screenshot Plus, and it doesn't work at all on the G4, the 933 G4 iBook, but it seems to be working sort of okay on the iMac or Intel iMac. But one thing I have noticed as far as screenshots go is, you know, I'm doing the iWeb article, and I've been grabbing a lot of screenshots from that, especially from the inspector. And now, for whatever reason, anytime I try to do a screenshot, the inspector disappears. I can't take a picture of it.
Minor issues with, like someone just said, Palm Desktop, which is a big deal for some people.
Yeah. They said AOL has problems, too. It crashes.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that sad? It crashes when you try to edit your preferences.
Oh, well, if AOL doesn't work,
it's awesome.
You lose at least two Mac users.
But the list I saw also listed Adobe CS3 as having problems.
I haven't had any problems with CS3, and I've put it almost every application in the CS3 bundle through the paces on both the G5 and the MacBook Pro.
It affects PDFs in Adobe Outlines.
And there is reports on HP printers not working. With some drivers problems. You know, I bought an all-in-one, an HP C6180, and I got to tell you, I love this printer. And and the drivers and everything, it all works. I was even able to scan something and send it right to Apple Mail. And I thought that was just the coolest thing. And I would really be bummed if that thing doesn't work right after an upgrade.
Well, I just reviewed, and it's still hooked up here, the 4280.
Yeah, that's working okay.
From HP. That's working fine. In fact, just, I think it was Tuesday, my oldest daughter had her school pictures, and I wanted to scan it in before it went to her mother's house. And I simply plopped it up there, hit scan, and the Mac woke up, scanned it in, no problem at all. I haven't tried printing to it because the color ink has run out on it, and I'm not going to go spend $30 for ink on it.
So you say the DigiDesign Pro Tools don't work, Eudora doesn't work. Well, it works somewhat.
One of the big ones for me is Retrospect has some minor issues. And Retrospect, at least as far as a lot of companies that have many, many Macs, they use Retrospect.
Is it the server that won't work or the client that won't work?
All it's saying is Retrospect. I haven't read an in-depth article on that yet. But
it says cool on... I'm sorry.
Go on, you go first.
I like how you guys pause and then start at the same.
I just happened to be reading here on the Mac. It says it attempts to back up a Time Machine volume with Retrospect, will result in the backup stopping during the scanning phase.
Why would you want to back up your backup?
I have no idea.
That's kind of retarded.
And Live Restore is not supported either.
Little Snitch is another program that I've actually used in the past, but it caused me a lot of problems even under Tiger. That's not working correctly either.
Oh, that one I love. That's too bad.
That was causing a lot of problems, especially with Skype for me.
It says there's a Little Snitch 2 beta that works with Leopard.
Yep. And also an older version.
Popcorn is on the list.
Popcorn is on the list?
Yeah. The list I'm reading anyway.
Flip for Mac, which allows QuickTime to view Windows media files. I guess there's some problems there.
There is an updater for that.
Yep, there has been an updater.
Yeah, for
the big,
for Mac.
The big one for me that's going to keep me off Leopard until this gets sorted out is Adobe Lightroom. That has quite a few problems in terms of screen redrawing under Leopard, and also some problems with printing, and also Time Machine apparently messes with Lightroom's catalog files. So until Adobe get an update for that, which is due middle of November, they're currently saying I'm not going to be able to upgrade.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
Did you hear anything about problems with Adobe Premiere or some of their video and audio apps?
Yes, I believe most of the video apps need some work. And the last thing I heard from Adobe on that was that they weren't going to get any updates for Leopard for those until January. So that's going to be a big problem for anybody who's doing sort of pro work under that. But I think this underlies the point. Anybody who's you know relying on their Mac for you know real heavy lifting should really take a long hard look at their apps before they upgrade to Leopard.
I would say that a good rule of thumb is if you're using your Macintosh in production, whether it's video type of production, audio, simple graphics, whatever it happens to be, if your bread and butter is made on that Mac, I would strongly suggest not upgrading to Leopard, at least for a while, until you know for a fact that all your core applications are completely compatible with it.
Yep.
So those are just a few of the programs that are, you know, having some problems with Leopard. And let's be honest, who here expected it to be otherwise? I totally expected it to be a lot of incompatibilities right off the bat.
Of course.
It was like this when Tiger came out.
Every single update.
Like just expected, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to get... Go ahead, Donnie.
More stuff worked, at least on the computer I have at work where I installed Leopard, more stuff worked than I expected this time around than with Tiger and I think Panther even. Is that right?
Definitely. Well, with Tiger, I got to say, almost everything worked for me on Tiger, but
yeah,
with
for me
Panther,
too.
Panther was a nightmare. So it looks like maybe every other major OS has a lot of incompatibility problems.
I mean, I was pleasantly surprised at how much I didn't have to look for an update for.
Yep.
Did you do an archive and install, or did you just do the quick update?
I did archive and install.
Did you?
I'm
going to do the quick update.
Last week, or two shows ago, I should say, show 150, Donnie and Rich and I were talking about some widgets. We used to have this guy on the podcast that used to talk about widgets all the time, by the way.
And yeah, what happened to him?
And one of them was the application update.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
And I'm using that. And every day it's finding new updates to software. So that right now for me is an invaluable utility to have because it's simply finding all these new updates to the plethora of applications I've got sitting on my hard drive that I hardly ever use. But
you're going to put in show notes as an update link?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I've got the page right here in front of me.
That doesn't help the people listening and when they get home and wanting to.
Could you hold it closer to the mic?
if you go to blog. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce this, gkaindl.com, that's going to have both the application update widget and the widget update widget.
Say it again, Will.
Just go to mymac.com, look for show notes 152. They're all going to be there. So that'll be the easiest way to do it instead of anybody trying to drive down the street writing it on the dust on their dashboard.
Or trying it with their iPhone as they're driving down the street.
They really are two outstanding widgets. And anyone who's new to the Mac, this should be like high up on the list of widgets to get.
Now, I know of the six of us, only Guy and I have actually installed and are using Leopard. But let's start with Donnie. Donnie, have you bought Leopard? And if not, when do you plan on buying it and updating? Or do you?
I haven't bought it for my home machine. I have it at school installed on my work machine. So I use it about, I guess, half of the day. And
Did you actually install it yourself at work?
Yes.
So you're just gonna bring that disk home and install your own personal Mac, right?
I don't have access. I don't have access to that disk anymore.
But that would be wrong.
That would be wrong. Owen,
I have bought it but not installed.
Do you plan to anytime soon?
I'm sort of watching the news since a lot of those apps I do use on that one machine. So,
Rich,
I have it in my hand right at this moment in the nice shrink wrap box. It's a cool looking box.
It is.
Let's see, you know, I'm a backup nut, so what I'm doing is I'm slowly looking at what's going on. I'm updating my software everywhere I can because I want to do the quick update when the time comes because I'm going to run two backups. I'm going to do a quick update, and if that works, great. If not, I'll clone back, and then I'll do an archive and install.
You know what? I did a quick update, I think, with Panther or Jaguar way back when, and something went wrong, and ever since then, I've always done archive and install just to play it safe.
Now, I haven't had a problem with the quick updates. They've worked well for me, and they've been fast and easy. So
I have only used updates, I must say.
This is the first time that I've ever done an archive and install and then a full wipe the entire hard drive. I mean, for instance, the G5 that I've got sitting here that I'm using right now, this is only about a year and a half old, this machine. It replaced another G5, but the hard drive that's actually in this machine came out of the old G5 because for whatever reason, it wouldn't suck the data from one machine to the other. It wouldn't work. The migration assistants just refused to do it. So I said, screw it. Instead of trying to install everything, I simply took the hard drive out of that other Mac and put it in this one. And so in a lot of respects, the OS that's running on this G5 right now from my migration past through the years really is the same. It's the same OS that I originally installed the Mac OS X beta on.
Mm. Wow.
You and I aren't too far off.
No.
I've done the same thing. Minus the one all the way back from the original install.
Yeah. I ran the beta. Everybody complained about the beta. I ran the beta as my main OS the day that it was ready. And I never went back. And so that was back on a G4. And then I cloned target mode that G4 to the G5. And that's the hard drive that's in this G5. So I'm sure that if I actually did an erase and a clean install on this G5, it'd probably free up a lot of speed on this machine. I don't know. But to be honest, the G5, an older machine than the MacBook Pro, when I updated it on this machine, everything just was smooth as silk. I had no problems. None. It worked right out of the box.
For those doing the archive install, you want to make sure you delete that previous system folder eventually, or you're going to have a couple gigabytes of wasted space.
Oh, yeah.
So, David Cohen, haven't got to you yet. Mac OS 10.5.
I'm probably going to upgrade probably about 3-4 weeks' time. As I say, you know, I'm going to wait for a couple more patches to come out for a couple of apps. And I'm going to do it softly, really. I've got too many Macs anyway, but I'll probably put it on the Mac Mini I've got behind the TV so that I can get front row on there, because I don't have front row on the moment. And then probably on the old G4 I've got at work, so I can then control the Mac Mini from work using back to my Mac. And then I'll probably leave my main machines until Christmas breaks, when I've got some time to really do all the backups properly, make sure that I'm happy with everything
Apple
I'm doing.
Apple did sell over 2 million copies of Leopard in the first week. And unlike Vista, that counts as sale every time someone buys a new PC and it's pre-installed, these are retail box copies of Vista, of Leopard, 2 million copies. I think that's quite impressive.
And I wonder how many Macs they sold in the same period because they were coming with Leopard as well, whether those saw a spike.
I was reading up on the unofficial Apple weblog. A writer there actually bought a new iMac, and it had the Leopard in there, but it wasn't pre-installed. Tiger was still in the machine.
Tiger was on there.
But the problem was it was an update disk for Leopard. It wasn't the full retail fresh install.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Which I thought was BS, because if he does have a problem, he did. He had to reinstall Tiger and then reinstall the Leopard update. That's not right.
No.
Right. Or are you able to start your machine on those disks?
Yes.
Okay.
But you can't install it on a machine that doesn't have a copy of Tiger already.
So do you have it installed both on a G5 and on an Intel Mac?
Say that again.
Do you have it installed on your G5 and on your Intel laptop?
Yes, I do. I've got, on both of my machines, I've got Leopard. Well, both of the machines I work with it on a daily basis. it's on there.
And do you notice one is any speedier, better than the other installation?
Honestly, no, not really.
Because I keep thinking that they're going to optimize this more for the Intel side.
Well, they did.
You know,
they did, and I didn't want to talk about that. There are some incompatibilities with some of Leopard's new features that are kind of hidden in the documentation from Apple, which really ticked me off. The first one, and David Cohen and I was talking about this before anybody else showed up for the podcast today, and that is the video background, so you can, like, it looks like you're standing in a racetrack or, you know, a falls or whatever it is, doesn't work in iChat on a G5. Doesn't work.
I've had problems with that on the MacBook. I have it work. I don't know if you're seeing the same thing, but it's almost like you step out of the picture until you step out of the picture, and then the background comes on, and as soon as you go into the picture, the background looks like it's being eaten by, like, a flesh-eating virus type of look. It just disappears, and the real background and the other background merge together. I don't know if it's a bug or...
No, Donnie...
That's a codec problem.
That is a codec problem, but on the G5, Donnie, it doesn't even install the video backgrounds during the Leopard installation.
Oh, okay.
You don't even have the option to have video playing in the background on the G5. And I found that complete BS, because they stopped selling G5s not even a year ago. Relatively brand new.
Yes, I have one on my desk. Thank you.
Yeah. And this isn't compatible. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not the end of the world that I can't have video backdrops on the G5. But I think that's BS. And the other problem I'm having, and this was also kind of hidden in the documentation that I found out after I installed Leopard, one of the main things I wanted Leopard for was back to my Mac. I wanted to be able to get to the G5 from wherever I was through the MacBook Pro, and back to the Mac was excellent for that. It was much better than Timbuktu in that I didn't have to worry about configuring a firewall or anything like that to connect it. The problem is, back to my Mac is not compatible with my Apple-branded AirPort. It's just not, it doesn't work. I've got the dual Ethernet AirPort, and it's not compatible. It doesn't work. So to get that simple feature that Apple is, you know, touting, I have to buy a brand new wireless AirPort.
So that only works with AirPorts?
Well,
it doesn't work with the spaceship model?
No.
Why would the network, why would AirPort make a difference?
Because you need to have the universal plug and play in order for the connections for back to my Mac to work. And I would presume that router did not have universal plug and play in the firmware. So that would be why. Universal plug and play basically allows the, when the connection comes through, it allows the router to connect the port, direct the ports forward to the Mac that's trying to connect.
So that's automatic forwarding.
Exactly. So if you don't have that on the router, then it's not going to work.
It ticks me off because there was I read nothing about that pre-Leopard launch.
Now, the back to the Mac feature only works from two Leopard machines, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so you can't even do that with an older machine.
And I wouldn't expect that, though. That I understand. It's a feature of the new OS, and Apple wants to make money on that feature, thus you have to buy the new OS to get that feature. I understand that.
Yeah.
But to not let me know that, oh, by the way, you're going to have to update your
router.
$150 router, that's BS to me.
It does say it on their page on the web.
Yes, but it did. It
well,
wasn't
there, it, if you know what you're reading. Before. Yeah.
Exactly.
Go ahead, David.
No, go on, you say first, because I'm going back to iChat.
Does it work if you do the share my desktop through iChat?
I haven't tried.
So of course, it'd be hard to ask yourself for permission to.
Well, but one's a laptop and one's a desktop, so I can be literally sitting in front of the desktop with the laptop in my lap and control it from instead of using the keyboard, you know, 4 inches to the right.
Just
but
looking
it's still
at
something that I would like to be able to do, absolutely.
Just looking at the iChat system requirements. In the Apple support site, it does now say on there that for photo booth effects or backdrop effects, you need an Intel Core Duo processor or faster. But of course, you know, that wasn't explained to us before Leopard came out.
No, and it wasn't on that page before Leopard came out. And that kind of, don't get me wrong, again, it's not that big of a deal, but man, at least be up front. This is not some ancient you know, Quadra that I'm trying to hack to get this working on. This is a very nice dual processor G5. And it doesn't work. A lot of the features that are in Leopard, not a lot, but enough to be annoying, isn't compatible. And that really kind of ticks me off. How many of you guys use TextEdit at all?
Yeah,
I use it when I need to quick word processor.
I use it all the time for show notes and stuff like that. It's just a lightweight, bring it up, type what I need to type, and I'm done. In fact, that's what I usually use for most of my articles now. And one of the neat things that it never did before, it has an autosave feature because I'm sitting there working on it on the MacBook Pro, and I notice on my desktop where I had saved the file, there's an autosave file right underneath the actual file. I was like, wow, look at that. It's autosaving, which was great.
That's new in Leopard?
I don't know if that's new in Leopard or it's simply new in TextEdit, but it didn't do it with the old TextEdit. But that's a nice little feature. I wish more programs took advantage of autosave.
That else is kind of cool. This is just a side note, but I read today the icon for TextEdit. Like the words written on it are, I think, the
beginning
voiceover
of it.
From the Think Secret commercial.
Oh, really?
Not the Think Secret. What? The Think Secret. From the Think Different commercial.
I have to check that out later.
Like the Think Different campaign, that's the words on the TextEdit icon.
I've zoomed right in on that icon, but I can't read them.
So
I noticed that Leopard is also having issues with some of those plug-in Bluetooth modules that people use, the Bluetooth adapters.
Yeah, that should be a pretty easy fix, though. Maybe.
I don't know. They're talking about, you know, updaters from those manufacturers.
Hmm.
So, and they're saying it may cause more significant system issues as well.
Yeah.
So...
But what do you guys think about the 64-bit Carbon in Leopard? That it doesn't exist. That Apple literally dropped 64-bit Carbon. They only included Cocoa.
The 32-bit?
Yeah. Well, 32-bit Carbon is there, obviously. But you can't program 64-bit Carbon applications that will work in Leopard.
But would you want to do that?
Apple literally dropped it. Well... Yes, because Carbon is a low-level programming language.
But why do you need a 64-bit version? Because all that gives you is bigger address space for the memory. It doesn't give you anything else, really, does it?
Well, if you start looking at Photoshop and some third-party video editors, yeah, you're going to take a lot more advantage of a 64-bit processing OS and application than you would otherwise. You can access more memory, and that would probably be... the biggest, because if it's still 32-bit, it can't access the same amount of memory that a 64-bit application could.
No, I think it's probably 4 gigabytes the limit with a 32-bit version.
Application. And, yeah. And, you know, Photoshop right now, I doubt if anybody's using Photoshop and is maxing out 4 gigs of RAM. But that possibility, that's a real possibility in the future, and Apple has now dropped the ability for Carbon applications such as CS3, you can't write them in 64-bit. It's not going to happen. And
do you know why they dropped it?
Yeah, they want people to buy Intel Macs.
No, they want people... They like Cocoa. They like the Cocoa programming language. Apple's really been pushing that hard. With Cocoa, though, you have to use Apple's UI. For instance, as an application developer, if I want my menus to look different, to behave differently than the little box that Apple paints for you, you can't do that with Cocoa, where you could with Carbon.
No, you'd have to create your own interface in Quartz and run it that way.
Exactly,
which is more work for the developers.
Yeah, I was talking to and I'm you all know who this person is, and I'm not going to say because I don't want to get this person in trouble. Who works for a major software manufacturer. And this was a big issue within his company that a lot of people in this company were very, very ticked off because of this. And he was going through all the reasons why it's much easier for large software manufacturers to use Carbon rather than Cocoa. And that with Apple dropping 64-bit, it really is going to hurt their business in the long run, in that they're going to have to spend a lot more resources to convert a lot of those applications over to Coca, then otherwise those resources would go to simply making them better.
This actually brings me on something that I wanted to bring up. I think we do have to remember that, you know, Apple really struggled to get Leopard out. With all the stuff they're doing nowadays, they're doing a lot more development. They've got the iPhone to worry about. They've got all the new iPods. They've got all these Intel Macs that are being upgraded regularly. I think at the moment they're a little bit stretched, and I suspect the reasons that you're seeing things like 64-bit Carbon being dropped. They dropped the ZFS support that was supposed to be in Leopard, and the fact that they actually had to delay the launch of Leopard is just because, you know, they probably haven't got enough people. And you know, hopefully as time goes on, they'll be able to address that, put some of those profits in, and skill up. But for the moment, I think we're going to see a bit of feast and famine, maybe.
I know a lot of developers are also saying that the Java implementation in Leopard is subpar. So that's yet another thing that Apple looks like they, like you're saying, David, that they had to pretty much drop out. Maybe they're going to come back to it.
Java's always been behind in the Apple.
Yes, but the implementation in the Mac was done by Apple, not by Sun.
Yeah, it's always been slightly behind.
Yeah. So I guess we probably shouldn't be surprised. But at this point, with Apple touting the power of their machines and really, really courting the developers, you would think that that Coca and Java would be high up. I'm sorry, Carbon and Java would be high up on their list of, we really need to get this out. Maybe a little less eye candy in the dock. Could just be me, though. Maybe I'm making a mountain out of a molehill, but... You know, I like my application to be as powerful and as stable as they possibly can be.
I guess we'll see what happens. If there's a whole load of updates over the next few months that bring extra features in, then we'll know they were behind. And if they don't and we wait till 10.6, then we'll know that they decided not to do it.
Well, I would be very, very surprised if 10.5.1 wasn't out before the end of the month.
Oh, I fully expect it to be. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty quick.
Yep, I think so too. Guy is the only other person here that's actually upgraded to Leopard and is living with it. What do you like about the OS, and what do you not like about the OS so far?
What I really, really like is the speed. Even on my 933 G4, I've at least it feels faster. You know, who knows, maybe it's the whiz-bang graphics and all that. But it does feel faster. However, it did take about 2.5 hours to actually load onto the G4. I basically started it going and then walked away after about 15, 20 minutes going, please don't do anything bad.
Was that an update install?
That's the speed of your...
Sorry?
Was that an update install?
That was the basic go ahead and do whatever it is you want to do when I put the disk in type of install.
And you said that was on a G4?
That was on a 933 G4, yeah, which is just barely...
Yeah.
Barely able to run it.
I would think that that's more to do with the speed of your DVD player, the speed of it.
Could very well be, because I also let it do the whole, you know, checking the disc thing as well.
Yeah, I always skip that.
I did on the Intel Mac.
I didn't skip it on the G5, but I did skip it on the MacBook Pro because it was the same disc. I thought... It was fine on the G4 or on the G5. I don't think that anything happened to my DVD between walking from 5 feet away. So I was like, yeah, you don't have to check the integrity of my DVD disc.
Well, it might have.
What do you think of the new dock?
The new dock, I think, really, really looks nice. What I do miss the more visual indication of which programs are open.
Thank you. Oh, I hate that on Leopard. You have, it looks like kind of like, I don't know, little glass beads or a drop.
Like a little blue bead.
What shows up? I haven't seen it. So
it's just there. A little clear,
like bluish
raindrop.
Yeah, and it's got like a blue background in it.
It's horrible. I absolutely hate it.
One thing I do like about the new dock is that as you're running your mouse over the various programs, that and Core Tiger did this as well. It, you know, tells you what the program is, but it's much more noticeable now.
Yeah, it is, definitely. But I don't like the visual indication of which applications are running in the dock.
Hard to
I'm
know.
I'm constantly doing Command Tab to bring up that window to see what's running. It's
right.
Just, you know,
How does it handle bouncing icons?
You know what they did, and And I actually timed this using my iPhone. I knew about how long it would take for Photoshop CS3 to launch under Tiger. And then after I updated it, it seemed to go faster. But then what I realized is it's just not bouncing in the dock as many times. It was still taking the same amount of time to launch. It just wasn't bouncing as many times, so it seemed shorter. You can't tell me that that wasn't a tweak.
You know what I noticed? I don't know if you noticed this. After I launched iPhoto once, it seemed the same time or slower. And then I launched it again, and then it was faster.
Well, I could tell you why.
The cache.
It's cached some of the information.
But Photoshop.
The first time you launch any application, it's going to be slower than the second time.
They cache the libraries, if I remember correctly.
But I use Photoshop CS1 at work on the MacBook, which runs fine, but it opens slower now.
Even on the second launch?
Even on the second launch. I noticed it takes a lot longer for it to fully boot with Leopard running.
Well, I know Adobe didn't get copies of the shipping version of Leopard very much sooner than the day it actually launched, so they couldn't certify CS2 or CS1 at the same time as they were certifying CS3. And obviously, Adobe is selling the CS3 package. That's right. Their big thing.
It works fine. It just takes longer to launch.
I think they're going to go back, and they're probably going to certify CS1 and 2. Maybe they'll even release some updates for those older suites. But Adobe's focus right now, obviously, is going to be on CS3, which I don't blame them a bit for. And I've run CS1 and 2, as well as 3, on this G5. They're all on here. And they all seem to work just fine, but I didn't really hammer CS1 or 2. I just don't use it, so if it wasn't compatible, I didn't really care too much. I was like, I got CS3, I don't care. But, going back to the dock, I really wish there was a better indicator of which applications were actually active. Wouldn't it have made a little bit more sense for the icons of those applications that are currently running to be,
darkened,
say, 20% larger. No, 20% larger in the dock. Well, just make them a little bit bigger so you know, oh, look, that application's a little bit, or that icon's a little bit bigger.
No, it shoves, I know, that application's running.
It's core animation. So
Or instead of that little blue glowing ball, why don't you have the icons glow themselves, have like a little outline?
Yeah, that's what I would do. I'd backlight them.
That might be nice.
What you can do, Tim, is
But it might depend also on the icon itself.
Yeah. What you can do is you can open up the graphics file where all the stuff in the dock is stored and change it.
I know. Yep, I know where you're going. You can change it back to the triangle. Yeah. But why should I have to do that? Didn't anybody...
Yeah, you really shouldn't have to do that.
You would think at Apple, of all places, they would know what's easier, what's best. Their whole human interface design group is supposed to be on top of this kind of thing. And I think this
sucks. But they're all using 30-inch screens, Tim, so it looks just fine.
But you know, seriously though, Owen, I'm using a 23-inch monitor here, and I do keep my dock a little bit on the smaller side, but still, I've got enough screen.
I haven't seen it yet, so
yeah, I've got enough screen.
I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know. But I always found the triangles to be a little too small, personally.
Oh, I did too. I think those were a little bit too small as well, but.
But they were certainly more noticeable than what they have now.
Why not have a preference in the dock, say, do you want the lights or do you want the arrows?
You know, the other problem is that now that the dock is somewhat translucent, if you've got some kind of a graphic in the background that's like the star thing, you got a star back there. And I guess that's just a star in my background. How stupid is that? It just doesn't make any sense.
Transparent menu.
It makes it so that when you walk into the Apple store, you can see that all the machines are running Leopard because it looks different.
Absolutely, and I think that has a lot to do with it. I think that was a marketing decision, David. I think that's a lot of it. Yeah.
Tim, I'm looking at the previous version here of OS X. That dock is transparent as well. It always was.
Yes, but with the black triangle right underneath the icon, it was much more eye-catching. And with this little ball thing... It looks like, you know, graphics that could be in the background. Now, Donnie,
there's the first Leopard trick, right? You do a background graphic of a bunch of those little balls.
Yeah. Now, Donnie, you said you don't like the transparent menus. In fact, the whole top menu bar is somewhat translucent because I've got the Leopard desktop. I can literally see stars through that menu now, which kind of bugs me.
It drives me. I think that should definitely be an option to control the transparency on that thing because I can't stand it.
So, Don, do you think that it's too translucent, too? You think that that's a problem, too?
In the menu bar? The menu bar, I think it is. I think they should have kept that solid.
I saw so many pictures of it, and I don't know. Like I think we talked about it in the last show, and I said, look, the desktop is the thing I'm in the least. You know,
that's true.
You're in menus all the time, though, Rich.
Yeah. Menus are always there.
No, and I agree with that. I think the menu bar is important up there, and if it's blending in with the background all the time, I can see that as a problem.
I do like the way they did the...
I don't see it a problem because it's black text, and the black text itself isn't translucent at all. In some respects, it kind of stands out a little bit. Well, I don't know. The transparent menus really don't bother me.
I like the new Apple logo, though. The little...
Blackish,
stainless steel one.
I like the spotlight icon a lot better.
I don't think I paid attention to it
than Under Tiger. Well, it's black now, and it doesn't. Before, even if it wasn't active, it had that little blue thing around it. That's
how do they look against that blue screen of death?
Looks pretty. Talking about transparent, it's so transparent I couldn't even see it.
Am I the only one who finds it amusing that Apple went from having beige computers to things that were really colorful and lots of colors back to black?
No, I think it's...
What happened to colors in Apple?
Well, yeah, that's true. Are you talking about the logo itself?
I just tell you what, a logo, now even the color pieces in the Finder have disappeared into black. You know, everything's become stainless steel and black.
Well, I think
that's just design. I mean, colors are so last year.
So now it's complete. I mean, now it's complete. Even the color in the Finder's gone.
Well, David, I think that what you said is more true than not, in that Apple is really taking after the automotive industry. What's the difference between a new car from this year compared to last year? Probably not much. Aesthetics, right? I think Apple.
The new cars are great. The old ones suck.
Exactly. You know, it's the way they look. And I think Leopard and Tiger as well does this, that you look at it, it looks new. It looks different. You want it. Whether it actually is going to be of a benefit to you is probably beside the point for a lot of users. They're looking at it and going, ooh, pretty, must have. Same thing in the automotive industry. You look at the new cars and you think, that's a cool-looking car. I want that.
But it works. 2 million copies in a week.
Oh, absolutely.
It does work, yeah.
No one could dispute the fact that Apple really knows what they're doing in this regard. I mean...
Seems like Apple had its fling with colors when it came out with the Dalmatian iMacs and...
I forgot about that.
It went back to leisure suits and, you know, stuff like tie-dye jeans for a while. It had its own little.
And here's the thing.
Well, I was wondering if this was a corporate move.
Probably. Right? Yeah. But here's the thing, though, guys. It's going to come back. I guarantee you. Right now, black and silver is what's in. Last year, it was the white IMAX. Now it's the black and silver IMAX. Next year, they're probably going to be all black or whatever that happens to be. It's going to be that. Eventually, we're going to get blue IMAX, pink IMAX. That will come back.
Red IMAX.
I could see a red one with the whole
Ferrari type of thing.
No. I mean, like, they've got the red iPods and they've got the
Apple. For the red project.
Campaign. Red. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's something else in Leopard that I'm noticing that this just jumped out at me as we're talking. If you're looking at a folder in list view, every other line is now a different color.
What?
And I don't think it was before. It's pencil like the Windows.
You mean like a spreadsheet kind of thing?
Yes.
Yeah, like iTunes.
Yes, just like iTunes, exactly.
It's not it's not like that in the previous version.
No. It was just a white background in the window. In list view, if you go to list view...
Oh, yeah. I see that now.
You get more of the pen striping, and I like that a lot.
Well, they said in their release that it was more of the iTunes interface everywhere.
Yeah, well, CoverFlow is definitely proving that point. And honestly, I could see where CoverFlow may help some people, but to me it's annoying. I don't like CoverFlow in the Finder at all because half of the applications that I have don't support it. I use Adobe Illustrator quite often. None of those graphic files work with QuickView, or if I'm going through it in CoverFlow, it's just a generic AI icon. I can't tell what it is.
Does it show the applications icon if it can't get to the app? You can paste an application icon onto the app to change it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the other problem. For whatever reason, and I don't know if maybe this is just my machine, I didn't really check on the MacBook Pro yet, but at least on the G5, almost all my text documents look the same. My Microsoft Office are all the white pieces of paper with the thing folded down. My PDF documents are the same, as well as my plain text edit documents. They all look the same. They're not retaining the application icons that they used to.
Huh.
So I can't quickly look at my desktop and tell what a PDF is or what a rich text document is.
Oh, mine, I could tell. I can tell.
So your PDF icons are still PDF?
It still says PDF on it.
No, maybe it says it, but is the icon the white paper now?
No. The icon's like the old icon that said PDF and had the little.
I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with my machine. But,
you have to rebuild your desktop. What's the equivalent?
Yeah, I wish there still was.
You know what I found?
We're running long in the tooth, and we do have another segment coming up, so let's hit the last couple little stories here. NBC reports that they only made $15 million with their iTunes deal.
Poor babies. That's
more than going to make in the...
How much are they going to make going forward?
Oh, okay, everybody's going to try that at once. Let's start with David Cohen.
That's more than they're going to make going forward, I think.
You can watch their programs for free on the NBC website. Yeah. Now, are they making $15 million from that? Go ahead, Owen.
I said they believe they can sell more advertising there and make more money on advertising dollars than they'll make from iTunes selling them.
Yeah, because nobody looks at the iTunes site.
One at a time.
Sorry.
David Cohen.
But the thing is that to sell advertising, you're going to have people visiting the site, and I don't think people are going to be coming. You can't download these files. You can only watch them online. So who wants to sit in front of the computers watching them? People download them from iTunes so they can put them on their iPod or their Apple TV or whatever and watch them somewhere else. They don't sit in front of the computer watching them.
I didn't say I agreed with it. I just said that's the inside scoop I got out of Digital Hollywood this week.
But they're dumb.
You know what I think it is? Those are all incidental, and I think NBC is probably quite happy with the $15 million that they made out of the iTunes deal over the last year and a half. I think the problem is they don't want so much power resting in Apple's hands.
Yep.
I think they saw what's going on with the record industry, with fixed pricing, and I think that scared the crap out of them. And they want to try to pull their content back and control their own revenue streams. They don't want to give this kind of power to Apple.
So how did
anybody disagree?
No, I agree with you, but how do you think it will affect Apple?
I have a partial agreement.
How will it affect Apple? I don't think it will at all. Because I think anybody that was buying stuff, that was used to buying stuff up there on the iTunes store, whether it be TV shows or movies or whatever,
still do it.
They're just going to find either something else to buy.
I don't mean quite that way. I mean, how do you think that will affect Apple with its other, like Fox and all the other shows?
I think it's going to have a negative impact as far as Apple corporate is concerned. Yeah. But from a consumer point of view, I don't want Apple, and I'm an Apple fan. I'm a very much of a fan of their products, but I don't want Apple to have this much control over the media content that I want to watch on these devices. I think there should be flexible pricing. I really do.
And look, if
as long as it's fair.
If NBC wants to sell its own shows, and I can still put them on my iPod, and they want to charge whatever they want to charge, then I don't have a big problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that either. It's their content. They can do with whatever they want.
Sign up with Amazon or something. I mean, that's what they did with the music, and I don't know how well it's working out, but it sure works out great for the consumer.
Do you think video on... Obviously, right now the big movement in the online music biz seems to be get rid of the DRM, and people will still buy it. And I don't know, as far as I'm concerned, or as far as my knowledge goes, Amazon hasn't released any figures on how... well, that they're doing with their MP, 3 store, correct?
Not that I'm aware of.
I haven't read that. Yeah. So well, I think that, is there any technological benefit for NBC to release, say, The Office as downloadable video files that do not have any DRM, thus we could play them on our devices, Rich?
No, I don't. You know, look, I think the problem is more more rooted in especially the music industry, right? I think their problem is really not, it's not the selling, it's not the DRM. I think they have a problem with quality. I just think that the quality of the music, I think that's really where their problem is, frankly. And that's, you know,
what,
kind of
Apple?
Off. No. I think it's the quality of the music that's being produced nowadays. I think people aren't buying it. So I don't really think it has really a whole lot to do with Apple and DRM and all that stuff. I don't think they have a different problem.
Owen, you've always been kind of the media guy around here. What do you think?
So I think I'll go back to NBC's first. I think NBC is afraid of Apple because Steve has made it very clear that he wants stuff to have DRM-free content. I believe he made a comment that he would not allow Apple TV to turn on the HDMI security layer. Because I don't know if you guys know how that works, but content providers can say that the HDMI layer comes on, which causes everything in your video system to shut down the analog path. So you can't copy it. And he will not allow that turned on. So if you want to be on the Apple TV, for example, you can't have the DRM bit turned on. And he's doing the same thing with videos and audio. And I think NBC and some of the studios are saying, hang on a sec, we want to be able to protect our content. It belongs to us. They're still afraid of theft. They still think it exists.
It does. But it's not coming from the downloadable content.
Well, the funny part is if you're buying it on iTunes, you're not stealing it.
It's coming from VCRs. Well, exactly. But here's the thing. The content, I can go. When The Office was up on iTunes, I could buy it for $2, and a lot of people did. Because if you go back in time, you will find out that The Office was not doing well in its first season, and it did not look like it was going to come back for a season two. iTunes resurrected that show. Millions of people went and watched it from iTunes. So iTunes was literally the reason that The Office is still on the air here in the United States. Not Great Britain, because they had the real Office and it was much better. But anyways,
yeah,
let's shout out to Dave.
Thanks for Ricky.
Yo, Dave.
Yeah. But let's be honest. If as an Office fan myself, and I actually bought a couple episodes off iTunes when I forgot to set the DVR, or something else recorded at the same time. If I really wanted a better quality, I wouldn't have gone to the Apple's iTunes store. I would have went to BitTorrent, like you were saying, Guy, and I could have got a true HD quality.
So there are online, and forget BitTorrents, there are other ways to get HD downloads of just about everything that's ever been on TV anywhere now for the last 3 months.
But, you know,
and I don't think it's hurting these people who pay. Right?
Can you send me those links, though?
Now, I personally don't like the price. I tend to think a typical season on a DVD is costing around $30, and I find $2 an episode to be a bit high because it's setting a very bad precedent in my feeling. That means, you know, if there's 22 episodes, you're now paying $50 for a season. It's too much money. I think they need to lower the price slightly, and the problems will start to go away.
The thing is that I'm up to date with season 2 of Heroes. I'm a big fan of the show, and I'm watching it off BitTorrent. And every single episode I watch, you can see the station logos in the corner. It's come straight off the transmission feed. It's not come from a digital content. So DRM is just a bogus issue. What I find
most of those come off of satellite.
That's
most of them are digital. The simplest way to do that is you capture off of DirecTV or Dish Network, or I think in England, Sky. In fact, a lot of the stuff I see here comes with a Sky logo on it, which I find very amusing.
The thing is, they're digital transmissions.
So.
Yeah. The thing is, I find it interesting that Heroes this season doesn't have the viewing figures it had last season, and it's not on iTunes. So, you know, I think there may be a correlation there.
Well, I think the correlation there more, as a huge Heroes fan myself, is that this season
I haven't even watched it this year.
I think that has a lot to do with it.
I didn't like it this year.
You're not missing anything.
Do you think NBC executives have worked hard to make sure that the quality of that show is maintained?
No.
Or have they just looked at it like the cash cow they think it is?
Well, they've already got a spin-off series called Origins planned.
And that's been canceled now, I think.
No, Kevin Smith just had a thing up on his website saying that he's still going to either write or direct an episode of it.
Unless the writer's strike takes it out.
Well, there you go. The other big story over the last week, the last big story that we're going to get into before we jump to an interview that John Nemirovsky did with Joe Cottonwood, the iPhone 1.11, or as I like to call it, iPhone 111s, has been unlocked by hackers and it's been jailbroken again.
I'm stunned.
Let's be honest. Anybody else here besides? Does anybody else here besides me have an iPhone?
I have one.
Do you have one?
I have one from the States, and it was supplied with 1.1.1 already installed, and it was brought over for me by my brother. So it took me about half an hour to get it down to 1.02, and then I could jailbreak it, SIM unlock it, and then re-upgrade it back to 1.1.1 with whatever I needed to do to get the jailbreak going. So it's really not an issue for me that this new software came out.
Now, if another
took you a whole half an hour.
Yeah, half hour. Yeah. Now, if another upgrade comes from Apple, are you going to update?
Well, I'll see. I don't want it to break my phone, and also I'll see what features it has on. If it has features on that I don't really need, then no, I won't bother. The phone works fine just as it is.
Now, as someone who has an iPhone that's on AT&T and they get my money every month now, there's no way in hell that I'm going to ever jailbreak my iPhone. I think Apple's 111 update and what they did with jailbroke iPhones with the SIMs and all that scared me to death. They've got
but it wasn't for guys like you. It was I can't remember what the numbers are. I'd love to go find them online. But what is it? 35% of the phones have not been activated because they're all going overseas. What a surprise!
Yeah, big surprise there.
That's why they cut down and only let people buy two at a time.
Chad Perry and I did a show back in episode 147 where we talked about that quite a bit. And I don't think Apple went out of their way to brick these phones. I don't think Apple was paying much attention to what the hacker community was doing, because at the same time they were trying to get Leopard done, new Macs rolling out, the update to the iPhone with the iPod or the Touch coming out. There was a lot of things going on. So when Apple updates the iPhone, they literally erase your entire phone, install the new OS, the update, and then resyncs the phone. They don't just patch it and you're on your way. Apple literally erases that entire phone and reinstalls a fresh copy of the OS.
Afraid of them, so I give my own experience to be good. And anybody who's ever used a Palm or a BlackBerry knows they crash from time to time. And I know the Apple phone isn't perfect, but they did a really good job of keeping it very solid.
So let's wrap this up, our segment, so we can get to Judd's interview here, because we're running at over an hour and 20 minutes already.
But it's just good content.
Yeah, that's right. I think that fun show to do this week. I think we had maybe too many people. I think for now on we're going to keep it at a maximum of four.
But which two? This is,
me.
Yeah, well, let's. who wants to do it next week?
I do.
But I appreciate all you guys coming on. Donnie, thanks for coming on. And again, give a quick pitch for your book.
Oh, it's Maxpiration, the First 50. I don't know the link offhand, but I'll blog about it again, or maybe you can push that blog back up.
Guy Searle?
Yes?
Once again, sir,
actually,
thank you very much.
I just wanted to say, now that I thought about it, I won't be here next week. I'm going on a little mini vacation.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no, Mr. Bell. Owen, thanks very much for coming on. Have we ever had a show, Owen, where we really went to your history with working at Apple and Atari? Because I know that I wanted to do that, but I don't remember that we've actually done that show yet.
I don't think we have. That would actually be a lot of fun. But yeah, so I'm available when you want me. That's being the unemployed guy now. So.
well, let's if you want to, we could schedule that right now for next week if next Thursday is open for you.
I would have to actually go get my machine that has my calendar on it. So. There are five computers in the office I'm sitting in right now, and none of them have my calendar on it. That's sad.
That's why you have to have a .Mac subscription.
I do have a .Mac subscription. I just need to sync them.
Yeah. Plus, you're on a PC right now.
I'm on a PC right now. I must admit, I'm on a Sony. So
we definitely need to schedule that show and go into some of your history, which I find fascinating. That's actually how I found Owen Rubin. I was doing some research on video games, and that's how I found Owen. The only reason I knew he was a Mac guy, because at the very bottom of his website, it said made on a Mac.
Made on a Mac.
So, Owen, you know all the deep, dark secrets of Pong? Remember Pong?
We need the cricket sound.
I remember Pong. No, my network went for a second there. Sorry. I'm sorry, what did you ask?
Hold on, this Britney Spears video is asking for a codec. Wait a minute, let me update this real quick. He said, you know the deep, dark secrets of Pong.
I know some of the secrets of Pong. I know the guy who made the original one, and there's a wonderful story about how I scrounged his original prototype out of the garbage can at Apple. I mean, Atari.
Really?
In my office was right next to the dumpster, and I saw them throwing a bunch of stuff away, so I went dumpster diving. And I said, oh, this is fun, and I gave it back to him. He now has it under glass.
Oh, I'll bet.
I'm going to put a link on the website for show 152, and a link directly to Owen's own personal website, which hasn't been updated.
That's not true. The guy who's keeping it up for me is back on it again. We made it black. We turned it black, like everything else. So
it was gray. See, you were ahead of the whole gray thing going on in the Mac. Your website was gray.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
I'll put a link up there. You guys can read up about Owen on his website, and then we'll have him back on the podcast here real soon. And we'll go into
all that quiz.
Because
let's do a really quiz
fun.
Show.
That'd be fun. Rich, how's the weather?
Actually, we're looking at a tropical storm moving along the East Coast here this weekend. It may make it stormy up here along the coast this weekend.
Ouch.
Otherwise, not bad. So
we're going to have to keep an eye on your website to find out if you're getting hit by a hurricane, right?
Yep, hurricane force winds on the Cape are possible.
So, Guy
David
and I.
Cohen. What's coming up on your radar?
Well, I'll be doing another fenestration this weekend. Going to be looking at Entourage and the issues about running that on a PowerPC Mac in a Windows office.
Oh, that'd be interesting. I absolutely adore your article, or your, I don't want to say articles, your segment here on the podcast.
Well, thank you.
A lot of times I think, man, we should get him to write these up as actual articles so we have them easily accessible, because quite honestly, there's still no technology that we can use to search audio content.
Yeah, that would be something good to do.
So we're going to wrap up this part of this podcast. We're going to jump over to John Demarofsky's Book Bites Live with Joe Cottonwood. He's actually a pretty famous author. It's going to be kind of a different type of interview that John did, but it's really cool. Thanks, guys, for showing up this week.
Thank you.
See you guys.
About 35 years ago, a book was published called Famous Potatoes, written by Joe Cottonwood. This is one of the best novels I've read in my entire life, but whatever happened to Joe Cottonwood? Famous Potatoes has gone out of print, and yet, here he is on iTunes. He's just published a book called, what's it called, Joe?
Clear Heart.
Clear Heart. I'd like to welcome Joe Cottonwood to this special edition of Book Bites Live. When did you write Clear Heart?
You know, I've been working on it for about 10 years off and on. I probably started about 10 years ago. I guess I finished it last year in the fall. Actually, around Christmas last year.
And what gave you the idea to put it on tape, so to speak, to make it available to the world as an audio book before it was published?
There was an article in the New York Times Book Review this year in March, and it was talking about podcasting, which is something I'd never even heard of before, and it told about several authors who were podcasting their books, and the reasons the authors gave were just instantly appealed to me. They were talking about how they were so impatient with the publishing process that it takes years to get a book out, and you have to jump through so many hoops to get there, and I've been there, you know, I've had 8 novels published. It just appealed to me, and I thought it was a good way to generate some publicity, and instead of my going out chasing after publishers, if podcasting was successful, maybe the publishers would come to me, and I could bypass a lot of the hassle and heartache.
Well, I've listened to the first 3 chapters, which are grouped together in one 30-minute segment. How do you put those 3 chapters together to make it into one continuous podcast?
A program called Audacity. It's a matter of editing. Now, I knew absolutely nothing. I never heard of Audacity when I started this. I know nothing about sound engineering, and I had to get a crash course in both the software and the hardware and in the sound engineering concepts. I'm basically self-taught and I'm still learning. So I record, I use a Samson microphone and record it using the Audacity program on my computer, which is an old iMac. I record each chapter separately and then I edit them also using Audacity. Then I blend them together using Audacity. And mostly it's an Audacity project. And then at the final step, I move it into iTunes to convert it into an MP3.
Now, when I listened to it, it mentioned something about Podio books or something like that. Are you submitting it to iTunes or are you using some third party push it onto iTunes? I don't get that at all.
Well, this is complicated. Podio books was mentioned in that New York Times article, so I went straight to them. And they have a website where they host authors reading their own works. And so that was my goal, was to get up on Podio books. And they are my host. The actual server that sends out my podcast is Podio books. Once I had it going on Podio books, there's a way to link it to iTunes so that, because Podio books is basically for people who are very technically smart and experienced. And they have to know what an RSS feed is and what to do with it. And frankly, I don't even know what an RSS feed is and I don't know what to do with it. By being on iTunes, all people have to do is search for Joe Cottonwood and then click on a button that says subscribe. And you, even my grandmother can do that, you know. So I tell everyone to go to iTunes. But really, my host is Podio Books.
But are they the ones that go through the mechanics of getting it onto iTunes for you?
No, I had to do that myself. Which actually, iTunes makes it very simple.
You mean to go from Podio Books into iTunes?
Yes. I did have to find something called my RSS feed URL. I just give that to iTunes. You know, I don't remember the exact process, but once I was into iTunes, there's an option you can select to have them offer your podcast. And I just followed the steps in that option. And the only thing that threw me for a loop was that they wanted the address of the RSS feed, which I had no idea what it was. But Podio Books supplied that to me, and now I'm up on iTunes.
That's great. Now, is each segment going to be several chapters, each about a half an hour long?
Well, my goal is to be between 20 and 30 minutes for each segment. And sometimes 30 minutes is one chapter. Sometimes it'll be three chapters. I don't want to make segments too short. And also some chapters just hang together as a good unit. And so I put them together.
Now, am I up to date? I only have the first podcast, which has chapters 1, 2, and 3. Are there five or six other segments that I've missed?
Oh, there's 11 available right now.
Oh.
11 episodes, about 30 chapters. And I've sent two more episodes to Podio Books. I don't know how long it takes to work its way through the Podio Books machinery before they actually put it up on their server. It seems to take about a week. So I'll be adding one or two episodes every week until it's complete.
I see. And how long in time will it take somebody, if they wanted to listen to the whole book called Clear Heart by Joe Cottonwood in one stretch, how long will the entire audio experience last?
They could get up and start listening at about 6 in the morning, and they'd be finished about 4 a.m. the next day.
And how many chapters does this – I mean, how many pages does this translate to as a typical hardcover book?
Actually, I have to back up. I think my math was bad on that. I think it's going to be about 16 hours.
Okay. How many pages would this be as a published book?
350.
So it's a seriously long novel.
It is.
And it's called Clear Heart, but it's not currently in print. Am I correct?
Correct.
And presumably your goal is to get it in print as well as having it be on Podio Books and iTunes.
Yes. The entire time I was writing the book, I was writing it as a book to be printed. I didn't even know about podcasting. Now, yes, I do want to have it in print. But what I want to emphasize is the podcasting has become not just a means to an end. The podcasting has become an end in itself to me because I just love it. It's been so much fun, and I love the results I'm getting. And to my gratification, people listening seem to like it too. So,
well, it's it's a well-written book. And tell us about your collaboration with the woman's voice, who's also it's not just Joe Cottonwood reading it. You have another actor doing your reading, correct?
Yes. Her name is Susan Walker, and she is just marvelous. When I decided to do the podcast, so much of my book is in dialogue that reading it aloud it's hard to tell one voice from another when you have long conversations with people interrupting each other. So I wanted another voice that I could play off of so we could interrupt each other and just interact in a good way. Put out a notice on my local e-group. I live in La Honda, California, and La Honda e-group, practically everybody in town is subscribed to it. So I put a notice out asking if anyone wanted to spend many days working on a podcast with me for absolutely no pay. and to my surprise, a lot of people volunteered, including some who have professional experience, including one who has Hollywood screen credits. And I was just amazed. And I won't name any names, but I turned them all down, as it turned out. And this woman, Susan Walker, came to me. She doesn't even live in my town. She lives way across the bay in Fremont. And she heard about me from her hairdresser. So you never know. She emailed me, and I gave her a tryout, and the chemistry was just instantaneous. Our voices worked together so well, and she's such a sensitive and expressive reader. It's just such a pleasure. And her game is so much better than mine that I've been improving just by working with her, because I keep trying to rise to her level.
Well, as a reader, you're really outstanding, because you've got your main characters plus being the narrator, and it's a shifting point of view of the narrator. So you're very busy as a reader. Do you ever forget whether you're coming or going?
No, I pretty much know the book by heart, you know.
And the book is called Clear Heart. That's correct?
That's correct. It's been through all the time I was writing it. The working title for me was Clear Heart, because it's a central metaphor to the book, and it's just I thought it was a nice title. And then when I tried to shop the book around to agents, I started getting feedback that, oh, Clear Heart, that's an awful title. What does it mean, you know? And so I said, okay, let's call it Nailed. That's a grabber, you know. So my agent said, okay, we'll call it Nailed. And then when I stopped all communication with my agent. I don't know what he's doing, but when I prepared this podcast, I had it all ready to go, and I have a wonderful friend who's a graphic designer who designed a book cover with the title Nailed on it. And at the last moment, I went to Amazon and typed in a search for Nailed. And just 2 weeks ago, somebody came out with a novel called Nailed.
So you were nailed.
So I was nailed, yeah. I had to scrap the book cover, and I went back to my old title. And frankly, I am so happy I'm back with my old title. I've already gotten some comments from people saying, I love the title. I get it. And
yes.
So it was meant to be that title, and I'm just very happy that I stuck with it in the end.
Now, we don't need to tell our listeners what this book is about, because they can go listen to it themselves. And if they go to iTunes and they do a search either for Clear Heart or Joe Cottonwood, they'll find this book right away, won't they?
Yes, they will.
Very good. And if they come to La Honda wanting an autograph, are they going to be able to track you down, or are you in a tree somewhere? I mean, that's a very woodsy area. Are you sitting up there in a tree with your Samson microphone and your Stone Age iMac recording chapters as quickly as you can while the duff is falling out of the forest?
No, I have a very nice house here. I should tell you, my recording studio, I tried recording in a bedroom in my house. It didn't work. I tried a closet in my house, and that didn't work. I tried the office in my house, and that didn't work, because La Honda is a motorcycle hangout. There are all these motorcycles going down the road, and you'd hear them when I was recording. So finally, I, in desperation, I went into my basement where I have my wood shop. Susan and I in the basement with a saw placed on top of my power – the saw – I'm sorry, the microphone we placed on top of my power saw. We stood on both sides of the power saw – talked into the microphone, surrounded by sawdust and lumber and hammers and, you know, nails.
And, yes.
And we recorded it there, and it sounds great. We get, for some reason, my wood shop has this great sound to it.
It really does sound good. Unfortunately, we're out of time now, but I'd like to thank Joe Cottonwood for telling us a little bit about patio books and about being a novelist with a book that lives in audio format only for the time being. But let's keep in touch with you as the technology changes and as your book goes through its own listener metamorphosis. Thank you for joining a special edition of Book Bites Live here on the MyMac.com podcast. We wish you well with both the audio and the published version of Clear Heart by Joe Cottonwood.
John, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks a million.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.